we're waiting on everybody else. We're a little early, so.
No problem.
Forgive that. You want to sneak in 2 minutes of Inter Miami?
Sure.
Woof. What a disastrous expansion season. They had no business being in the playoffs. Get into the playoffs. I don't even want to draw comparisons because the Marlins earned their way into it. Inter Miami somehow survives the worst start in MLS history for an expansion side, and they somehow get into the playoffs, which is a bit of an achievement, and they get absolutely dusted by their fellow expansion team, Nashville SC, and the expectations entering this season, expectations that were propped up by the ownership group and all the interviews. This season was not about comparing yourself to Nashville SC. It was about comparing yourself to the expansion years of Atlanta United and LAFC and becoming really one of the glamour clubs in MLS from the get-go, and you get dusted by the other expansion team. It's just a terrible situation right now for Inter Miami, Chris.
Do you think that this pandemic almost lets them off the hook a little bit? Because people will just kind of chalk it up to this was such a weird, wacky season that we're not going to hold it against them and we're going to give them a fresh start next season? Or do you think that people see through it and they're like, regardless of pandemic, they were a shit team?
Not from a football operations standpoint. I don't think they catch any breaks there. From a business operations standpoint, which has not gone well for them either over at Inter Miami, it does. You can't ask for a worse situation to start your MLS franchise. In fact, MLS has, outside of the team in Austin, postponed the expansion years for all the upcoming expansion teams because they know exactly what this does to the economics with the team that enters the league riddled with debt. And MLS, unlike the other professional sports leagues in the United States, the bulk of their money comes from the gate. They don't have this massive TV contract. Gate business is the crux of what they do over at MLS, and to not have the gate is just a huge blow. And before they started adding players like Matuidi and Higuain, they already had one of the more expensive sides in the league. It's disastrous. Nobody got better under Diego Alonso, the manager. The Pellegrini designated player situation.
What moves did work out? Like, is there a move that they made that you're like, that was a good move?
Yeah, Perez, LGP, was probably their player of the season. Fortified, I guess if you can call it that, their defense. And Lewis Morgan, the Scottish, I guess he's going to be a Scottish international. He was really good. They got him from Celtic, and his crosses and deliveries were really good. Pizarro was a bit of a disappointment. You see the talent, but a ball hog, and not unlike me hogging this segment so far. There were multiple fights on the field. It didn't really seem like it was a fit. Higuain is washed, done. You get one goal from Gonzalo Higuain in 800 minutes. I'm a Chelsea supporter, and I know what that guy is all about. And as like the shitty cherry on top, he has COVID-19 for their playoff game.
Shitty cherry.
It was disastrous through and through. And watching that playoff game, they could have been a lot harder on Inter Miami. John Champion absolutely took Higuain out. But it's been bad, Greg. It's been really, really bad. And they need to do something because they can't bring the entire situation back for another run next year and just chalk it up to pandemic.
I think the problem is part of the problem in terms of public perception is that the Beckham group set the standard high by saying we're going to be an all-star team. We're going to shoot for the stars. And then Atlanta United sort of set the stage that, hey, you better be good right away. You know, if we look at what expansion teams are supposed to perform as throughout sports history, then they're closer to the mean. You know, if I'm pretending to be Ray Hudson and I could never do his mellifluous accent,
try.
If I'm pretending to be the optimist broadcaster like Ray Hudson, I'm going to say, look, after that 0-5 start, I think they only lost two more matches than they won. They were a what you expect an expansion team to be after that 0-5 start. I thought anyway, but I agree with you, Higuain, and he was their biggest signing. And then his missing the playoff match with COVID in a 3-0 loss was the perfect cherry on top of this season. You're right.
There's a glimmer of hope, if you ask me. That was a terrible impression of Ray Hudson.
You gave it a go, though. Yeah. I don't really know what they can do. Those are going to be difficult. I think with Pellegrini, which is you can make an argument that Pellegrini is the most disappointing of all the contracts they dished out. Here's my problem with Inter Miami. No one got better. Like no one got better. Pizarro didn't get better. Higuain, you'd think that a player of that pedigree and that goal-scoring record, even though he's definitely on his last legs as a professional, would be able to come into the league and score. But I think what you're seeing in that league is these slower, older, designated players really struggle in MLS because for all of the knocks you can give MLS, it is a bit of a pacey league. You need speed. The manager just never adapted. If you follow MLS, the fact that Dax McCarty picked up a ball at midfield and ran all the way into the box, unchallenged, not pressed at all. When you have Matuidi, you bring in Matuidi to play defense. This is a World Cup winner. And he lets Dax McCarty score a goal in that situation. It's just like, okay, this manager just doesn't know how this league works. I don't think we should bring him back. And I think in terms of roster construction, there's some major issues that need to be addressed.
Matuidi is an adorable name. We can all agree on that at least.
Yes.
It just gives off because, you know, Tweety Bird. Matuidi.
Beckham also doesn't post about the team. He sort of like disown them on social
media. That's true.
Greg, I don't know if it's bad for his brand or if he's frustrated because he's because of the pandemic, he's sort of trapped over in the UK, but you could count on him always before the season. He would post about them nonstop. And as soon as they struggle, there was one post about them making the playoffs. There wasn't anything after their elimination. He's become like an absentee owner just in terms of appearance, which is what David Beckham brings to the table, his appearance.
Right. It's definitely an embarrassment to his brand. But this was a doomed season. It was doomed. The pandemic hit literally as anticipation is building for opening week in the first home match. I mean, the timing could not have been worse for this team in particular to see its launch. It's long-awaited launch. We've waited 6 years for this to finally happen, and we're on the doorstep of it finally happening, and everything shuts down. It was almost as if the whole season was ill-fated at that point.
Let's switch gears because we've talked MLS too much, probably. I already feel the audience.
Thankfully.
Upset.
Yeah.
I am. Yep. I mean, we've been just sitting here waiting for you guys to finish. We thought you were just
staring.
Talking. Like, honest to God, I'm not joking here. Me and Stugatz have been sitting here the entire time, and Mike just waved us off saying, hey, we're doing show here. He pantomimed it, and he pointed at his watch telling us we've already started. Me and Stugatz, this is one of the few days me and Stugatz have been here both on at the correct time. We didn't know you'd started. We thought you and Cody were just talking, as you do, boring each other to tears talking soccer the same way that you bore the audience to tears talking soccer. I didn't notice any difference between an interview and you guys just yammering about this sport.
It's okay. Dunk on me for being unprofessional. Let's move to the Miami Dolphins. Tua gets benched by Brian Flores, and that's obviously a ballsy call by the head coach, Greg Cody. Now, Tua has been assured that he's going to be starting the next game. Put me in your clogs. When Brian Flores makes that decision, what is Greg Cody thinking?
I think it's a weak decision by the head coach. Here you have your rookie quarterback 4 games in. It's his first real test in the sense that it's the first time he's about to lose a game and he's in a position where he has to win a game.
Hold on. If I may on that, because I just don't understand why you and Mike are both doing that when he just bleeping did it at Arizona. Like, they were down. He's on the road and he went 90 yards. Like, what are you guys doing with this is the first time he's been tested? It's not the first time he's been tested.
It was the first time that late in a game when he was in a win or don't situation. The Arizona thing, I think,
that was a fourth quarter
earlier
drive.
In the game.
It was a fourth quarter drive. I don't understand where this is coming
Why
from.
Why did with, I get well, dragged into this?
Because you did it yesterday.
I wanted to make the argument that if you merely change the order of the games that he's had and the last impression that you have is Arizona, you feel pretty good about the quarterback. I think you should be patient with a rookie quarterback and not go week to week with this. It's a curious decision by Brian Flores because you don't really see coaches pull the plug because they're worried about confidence. Obviously, not something this head coach needs to worry about.
Hold on. A second, it was not Mike. In Mike's defense, it was me who said those ridiculous things yesterday. Okay, I removed Mike from the equation. I said that Flores is playing a dangerous game with Tua. Billy agreed. That's it. Let's move on.
Oh, that's right. Billy did his move of agreeing with just like the.
Should we go around and say what we're thankful for? Because everybody seems going after each other today a bit.
Cody, I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Please continue.
I thought it actually, you know, if there's karma up there, I thought it actually served Brian Flores right that Fitzpatrick threw an interception in the end zone, because it was just sort of a slap in the face at a poor decision made. You know, Tua. I don't know what his mental state is, but I'm guessing right now it's still fairly fragile as a guy 4 years into his career. But this didn't help, and I think you go with Tua regardless in that situation. If the worst happens and Tua loses that game because he couldn't generate any offense, that's a learning experience that he's going to need down the road. And I think there was every opportunity to just stick with the rookie at that point. Every opportunity.
I mean, you could say him getting benched is a learning experience. You could say that him throwing a pick six in that spot, if they left him in, could be really harmful for a young quarterback. Like, I feel like you're just taking what could be a learning experience and what could be detrimental to his growth and just selecting two things randomly when we really don't know how he's going to react to this.
This is fascinating to me, okay, because I actually am super interested about how people are this divided on this subject, and I wonder how much it has to do with the sheer amount of hope that he brought to the position. And when you bench him, the sports fan in you is like, wait a minute, coach, what, now I've got to start thinking about whether my quarterback is just an intermediate thrower as I watch Justin Herbert sling the ball all over the field? I've got to worry that you don't trust my next 10 years? I've got to worry about that? I think it's poisoning some of the analysis here, but that doesn't explain what Deadspin is doing, because we know Greg Cody is a local homer. Proudly, even though he weirdly denies it, he always thinks the local teams are going to win. And he is a Dolph fan. He refers to himself as a Dolph fan since 1966. That's correct, right, Cody?
I used to be a Dolph fan, yes, having grown up down here. Right. I try to be a little bit more objective,
Chris,
these days.
Chris, still a Dolph fan, Chris, is your father a Dolph fan, and does he try to be a little more objective than that?
He's a Dolph fan. I mean, he roots for his picks almost as much as the Dolphins.
Thank you.
But he's a bigger
fan of Greg Cody than he is of the Dolphins. Right, he's a bigger fan of narcissism than he is of Tua. That's correct.
I'm a bigger fan of being 20-8 against the spread the past 2 weeks. Wow. That's what I root for.
Attaboy.
So here it is from Deadspin. And Deadspin agrees with you, Cody. This is a writer named John Helmkamp. I'm of the firm belief that when you give a rookie quarterback the starting job, you don't call take backsies 4 weeks later. What Brian Flores did to Tua in yesterday's game was atrocious and was a terrible display of a lack of confidence in the young signal caller. With 10 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, down 20-10, the Dolphins head coach sent Ryan Fitzpatrick out at quarterback. Twitter exploded. People weren't sure if Tua was hurt or if he was flat-out benched. There was a moment earlier in the game when Tua appeared to be rolled up on, so speculation swirled that maybe his ankle or foot was bothering it. No, it wasn't that. Flores is just an idiot and benched his rookie starting quarterback in crunch time because apparently a career journeyman quarterback gave his team a better chance to win or some bullshit like that. Then there's an NFL update on Twitter. Head coach Brian Flores says Tua did not get hurt. He was benched for his performance. Fitzpatrick gave the team the best chance to win at that point in time. Tua is still the starter moving forward. Oh, good. Well, at least after basically showing your young quarterback that you don't think he is capable of leading a comeback, you have the courtesy to tell him that he's still the starter next week. I'm not sure what else Flores is wanting to see out of Tua. He led the Finns to 3 straight victories, has shown good control of the system, has the support and belief of his teammates, and hasn't thrown an interception yet in the NFL. If he's your quarterback of the future, which he is, then you put him out there, give him the opportunity to grow, and step up in a crucial situation and see what happens. You can't send him back to the kiddie table and say, hold on, kiddo, it's not your turn for the main dish yet. To say it was performance-based makes absolutely zero sense to me, and apparently ESPN analyst Dan Orlovsky agrees. This is Orlovsky on Twitter. Rewatching that tape for Miami Dolphins, it's hard for me to accept Tua got pulled for his performance. It wasn't even remotely close to being poor. O-line overwhelmed, 3 drops, going on a fourth quarter drive, and 3 O-line penalties crush it. 1 missed throw, 1 misread on the game. Oh, also, I think it's important to point out that Fitzpatrick threw a game-ending interception, and they lost anyway. Flores' master plan accomplished nothing other than confuse his team and potentially mess with the confidence of his young quarterback. There's a reason Fitzpatrick was benched to begin with. There's a reason he's never been the guy on any of the eight teams he has been on. There's a reason you drafted Tua fifth overall. Tua is going to be looking over his shoulder at all times, wondering if a single turnover, a missed throw, or taking a sack instead of throwing the ball away is going to lead to him getting benched. Flores, just give the kid the starting job and don't look back. Experience is the best teacher for a young quarterback. Let him have this.
Bingo. Dangerous game, Dan. That's what I said yesterday. You're playing dangerous head games with Tua.
Could have just said that. It would have been a lot quicker.
Exactly.
Well, it certainly would have been quicker, but I'm wondering, and I don't really understand this part, so you guys help me understand this part of the dangerous game. Because Tua has chosen to make his living in a literally dangerous game, and because he has climbed to the very top of what is literally a dangerous game, and he has won a championship in college, and he has been taken at a position in the draft that makes him the hope and savior for this team, and turns the Dolphins instantaneously from a regional team into a national one in a dangerous game. You guys have him being weak, man. Like, you guys have him being a little baby who can't handle the idea that his coach treated his employment as merit-based, and he was shitting the bed for three quarters, producing 10 points. Like, he wasn't good enough, and they had somebody that in that game for one quarter, he thought, the coach thought, I've got a better handle of the two-minute drill because he's a young quarterback. He can learn this, but he can learn this without costing me playoff games. Like, he can learn this over the next 2 or 3 years because this season isn't about now anyway. I want to win now while balancing that. You can call him an idiot if you want. I think this decision is more ambiguous than being dismissed as an idiot for making it.
In the absence of actually knowing Tua, because none of us do, we have no idea. Yes, he's a world-class athlete. Yes, he played quarterback at Alabama. Yes, he was the fifth overall pick. Yes, there are expectations. You don't know how he's wired mentally. None of us do, and we don't know how this will affect him long-term. No one knows
that. But if he's that weak, he's going to be bad anyway, is my point. If he's someone, my point is, if he's someone who's wrecked like this, he is not your next 10 years. He simply isn't.
Preach.
He cannot be built that way.
But he's also, Dan, if he can't get you out of a 10-point deficit on the road against a bad Denver team, then maybe he's not your quarterback.
This is how we used to bring quarterbacks along.
That's pretty hard to do for any of
these. This is how we used to bring them slowly. It wasn't Justin Herbert, drop him in there because the other quarterback's lung has been punctured by the team doctor.
But to your point, he just did it a week ago against Arizona on the road. So why not give him the opportunity to do it again against Denver? He's not going to get it right every week, but growing pains. I mean, come on.
The thing, though, is if this season isn't about now and the next couple seasons is about developing Tua, then why are you trying to get a win to get into the playoffs if you're not playing for now when you could potentially have a pick at the top of the draft and draft a replacement if Tua isn't the person?
A totally fair question, Billy. And what I would say to you is that Brian Flores, and this is why he is neither a genius nor an idiot, just someone making a difficult decision, which is what you pay CEOs millions of dollars to make.
Yep.
Precisely where you are, because he is simply trying to balance. It's the reason you have a coach, right? Because all the guys want to play. A coach needs to decide who's going to play. I'm paying a bunch of people. Who's going to play? I'm going to handle the management of personalities. The reason it's an excellent question is because he's in a position where he's got to make a decision between, I want to win now to establish the culture of winning around here. After last year, everyone was accusing us of being unethical for trying to quit for a draft pick while also nurturing my young quarterback. I've got to do both, and sometimes they're going to conflict, and they conflicted in the fourth quarter in Denver on the road. Like, that is the difficulty in the decision. It's why I think on either side, you can't call somebody idiotic for choosing either side.
It's a very tricky spot, but is the now so important that you're willing to maybe mess with the future?
It's up to the coach. That's the coach's job. His job is to have the vision to build the architecture that your team that thing. It's why you've hired him.
Brian Flores is far from an idiot. He's done a lot right with this franchise in a season and a half. In this case, he made a mistake.
You don't know that. You can think that, but
he made a mistake not because it was a lack of confidence, but because it was an unwarranted lack of confidence. Tua was the first quarterback, the second quarterback in the Super Bowl era since 1970 to start off 3-0 with zero interceptions. There was every reason to be very hopeful about this kid. and to yank the rug out from under him in that situation.
Greg, did they yank it out from under him or out from under you because you wanted to see a fourth quarter drive? Because the part I'm confused by is you guys all saw this, right? Their offensive line was getting mauled despite his mobility. They had one touchdown in the game, and that touchdown was on a short field because Xavier Howard, like, it was a totally short field. They did shit offensively for three quarters, like, absolutely nothing except giving the ball back again and again to Denver. Like, if you're gonna have Ryan,
they did too much when Ryan came in. I mean,
they scored. They did though.
They got a field goal.
No, he got a field goal, and then he was driving them down a field the way they hadn't all game at the end, and throwing into the end zone in a way they hadn't all game.
I'm enjoying this. You guys are emotional about this. This is what I sound like with the Browns. First off, I think you're projecting Hellcamp's opinions on us. Like, I'm pretty chill about all of this, and I think he's got to manage his locker room too. While he said it was because performance and Ryan Fitzpatrick gave them the best chance to win, he can't throw the offensive line under the bus. To put it in my perspective, we saw this with Baker Mayfield when he had cracked ribs and he was getting destroyed behind an offensive line that was struggling and he was ineffective. They put in Case Keenum. It's the same thing, but he doesn't want to come out there and drag an offensive line that was having a terrible game.
You bring in Fitzmagic and it better work. And it did not work.
He decided to say that Tua was ineffective, and you got to trust Brian Flores for knowing the personalities too.
Well, and Tua came out afterwards and said, I was holding the ball too long. We weren't moving the ball on offense. I totally understand. I would have liked him to come out afterwards and said, no, I'm the fifth pick in the draft. I'm the guy. I'm the future of the organization. You leave me in the game.
Really? Yeah. Really? That would be great. Yes. That would be pretty great if he did that, showing a side of his personality that none of us have seen. The part that's confusing to me about some of the reaction here, because while not everyone might be calling Flores an idiot, Cody is closer to saying that than he is to saying that it was a reasonable decision that Flores made. And my question to you guys is this. When you say it didn't work, Stugatz, I thought it did. Like, what you do that for is to get a spark for your offense. And right. They looked better on offense the moment he got to the game. Like, that's precisely why Ryan Fitzpatrick is still on your roster, not traded to Dallas. Oh,
guys, it absolutely worked. And I know Fitzpatrick ends up throwing the interception in the end zone. No one really wants to say, like, Simmons made an unbelievable play. The guy teleported from one side of the field to the other. That's an all-pro safety. Now he knows that he can bait Ryan Fitzpatrick into that throw because Ryan Fitzpatrick has a career under his belt,
held on to it. A lot of defensive backs don't hold on to
that
ball.
Ryan Fitzpatrick did exactly what Brian Flores was looking for. So while it's been a controversial decision, it kind of worked. He gave you a chance to win a game.
He's
that
throwing into the end zone.
I know we all wanted to see what Tua would do, but if you were watching that game, it just wasn't going to happen for Tua.
I was looking forward to the possibility of instead arguing about whether or not Flores should have gone for two after they scored the touchdown because Fitzpatrick brought them back.
For Tua.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I think they should have put in Tua just for the two-pointer, and then we all would have just short-circuited. Put him in for the two-point conversion only. What are we doing? You don't teach him how to learn in that spot, coach. You got to win the game with Fitzpatrick. That's not the spot for the young quarterback to learn.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. What if we didn't fully see Brian Flores' plan? What if his plan was just to get Fitzpatrick to drive them to about the 5-yard line, then bring in Tua because Tua is good at the 3-yard touchdown passes? And we know that Ryan Fitzpatrick has a tendency to throw interceptions. So what if he just gets Tua in there and then Tua is kind of the closer once you're there?
Ryan, get us to the 5.
Cody, what would your analysis be if the result of the game had been the following? I'm just curious. Same exact game, okay? But for whatever reason, you get a drop on that pick and it bounces up and your wide receiver catches it in the end zone. And then you go for two. And then all of a sudden, Flores throws to win the game because he's clutch. We saw it at Alabama. He's clutch. And then for 3 yards, Tua runs and scores, and they win on the road because the coach is ballsy and did ballsy things. And they win the game. Your analysis is the same, Cody?
Look, it's not about this game. It's not about this season. It's about developing Tua for the next 10 to 15 years.
Okay, but I'm just asking you, what is your analysis if the scenario, honest to God, think about it for a second. There is no loss. There is simply the move worked. Fitzpatrick got the touchdown at the end, And then they put in Tua for the two-point conversion. So we're really distilling this, not to the future, to a single bleeping play about how we're analyzing whether a guy is making the right decision or not. And he scores on the play. A three-yard run where he fumbles the ball and he kicks it and he lands on it in the end zone.
Why are you making this the Three Stooges?
I'm trying to make it as hard as possible to do this analysis off a quarter, off a play, off a game. Like, the reaction is too knee-jerk in both directions on what's an ambiguous decision. Like, it's not an obvious decision. It's so not obvious that I was surprised when Flores made it. And I'm like, is he hurt? Who does this? Coaches are not normally this courageous to actually say, I am actually... When Dabo Swinney's athletic director says, and is quoted, Dabo is worried about protecting Clemson and the player. Well, what if it can't be both? Then which one is Dabo protecting? Because when they conflict, that's the choice you're making. It can't be both. They lost the game the way they did it. But what if they hadn't? What if a bounce goes differently like you see in the NFL all the time, Greg? What is your analysis today if the scenario I just put in front of you, don't assume that you have any access to the failure or what all your feelings are because you think it was a bad move now. The result of the day is you are in here on Tuesday and all you have is that information. Game-winning spark by Ryan Fitzpatrick, touchdown, Tua comes in for the two-point conversion, they win on the road.
Brian Flores looks like a genius and it was still the wrong move to make. I just think you have to be, I honestly believe that, laugh all you want. I honestly think that Brian Flores needs to be concerned with, bringing Tua forward, in Tua's best interests more than in the team's best interests at this season.
But what and if they, you know, that, they, and you know, his best interest better than Brian Flores.
But what if they conflict, Greg? Like, see, this is the thing, because I'm asking you.
Right.
I keep
they conflicted in this case.
But if I pin you down on this, Greg, then what you're actually saying is you have to lose the game with Tua instead of win it with Fitzpatrick. Like, that's what you're saying. You're saying lose the game, that you would have been more okay with the long view of, well, he had a fourth quarter drive and he's the one who threw the fourth quarter interception.
I'm saying you give Tua every access to all of the experience he needs. And some of that is going to be negative experience. Some of that is going to be growing from.
So you're taking the loss. You're chewing to. You're choosing Tua and the loss over Fitzpatrick and the win, which is all that Flores was trying to do.
Sports radio.
So sports radio.
Yeah, there's no right answer. You both are all making great points. I love listening to it, but there's no right answer here.
So they go out and win that game. Then what do you do the next week?
It's Tua. No, it's Tua's team. It's Stugatz. It's Tua.
Oh, I don't know.
It is Tua's team.
You have a locker room divided.
Fitzpatrick is just.
What do you know about the locker room?
Fitzpatrick is just better at the. How could he not be better at the two-minute drill? He's been in the league 27 years.
He knows Chan's offense.
I mean he's done.
But like, he knows everyone's offense.
He knows everything about offense that's been played back to Sid Luckman's day.
I mean, Mike says there's no right answer here, and he's right. I don't think Dan and I are arguing that they're like, we're just kind of saying this was interesting and crazy, and we'll see how it plays out. While Greg and Stugatz are sitting here like, I know that this was the wrong answer.
And I'm not saying I know it was right. I'm saying two things. I found it fascinating, and we have waited 20 stinking bleeping years around here to have the sports radio conversation about the Dolphins quarterback
and
have the country care about it.
Yeah,
like,
man.
It's been Jay Fiedler and Sage Rosenfels and Cleo Lemon. Yeah. It's been Gus Frerotte and Trent Green.
And we've covered this using terms like Sid Luckman and the Three Stooges. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah, we're old. I mean, there is a right answer. We just don't know it, which... is also sports radio.
Yes, that's correct, but that's the foundation of everything we do around here. Throw out something radio. That's totally unknowable. Pretend like you know. Take call.
I think Greg is probably also applying conventional wisdom when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. But look, the Jets are about to give up on Sam Darnold.
Yep.
Where in years past, you have to keep trotting him out there because he has such a cost-prohibitive contract with the rookie wage scale. You can afford to make quick decisions on these quarterbacks. Mariota, that's not a quarterback that the Titans just simply move on from in the fashion
that
they
did. Look how quickly Arizona did it.
Yeah, we're seeing it a lot more. The NFL has changed.
I think what we're seeing here is Greg and Stugatz, they've seen this before. their parents, and they know that failure is the greatest teacher. And sometimes, even though it hurts you, you need to let your kids fail so that they learn, so that next time they know how to succeed. And Brian Flores took that away from Tua.
Billy, that is,
he took failure away from him.
Billy, that is excellent analysis. If what had happened in the fourth quarter is Brian Flores had put a pineapple at quarterback, because that's how Greg Cody parents, by giving his son a pineapple for his birthday and teaching him through love and failure that he's a shitty gift giver and a parent that occasionally will choose himself over his son, even though he. Oh, that is dangerous waters for me to end up in.
Yeah, don't go there.
In Greg's defense, Greg gave Chris the opportunity to grow as many pineapples as he wanted, and Chris laughed at it. Yeah. Yes. Give a man a fish.
I ate it. I ate the pineapple.
Give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. Teach a man a fish, he'll fish for a lifetime.
Beautiful. And by the way, there's a sad addendum to the pineapple story. I spent $5.99 for that pineapple. It was a beautiful gift. I'm in Publix the other day. I see pineapples for $2.99.
Oh, they got you.
So not only was I made fun of for my gift, but I feel like I got cheated.
I have a bunch now, Greg. The price will go up.
I should. The trouble is they last about a week, so I got to start like giving them out, you know.
I love in the middle of that, that we were talking about growth and failure and parenting and love, and all you got from Chris Cody was, I ate it. I ate what was meant to teach me about the future growth of organic and wonderful living. I was given a fish, and I was taught how to fish, and I chose to just eat the fish and throw away my rod and then get fired.
It's in my belly. I also love that we're clamoring for adversity for Tua. He's been through a couple of knee surgeries.
Well, yeah, that's another. Billy said that he ripped away a chance for him to fail. I think Tua feels like he failed. I don't think he needed to have like a 2-minute drill go unsuccessful for him to not know that he failed.
That's the thing. That's the thing about when you hear teams, right? Like I'm at this point, right? You've heard me say before, like Jimmy Butler is not going to do a whole lot of learning from losing. Like he's at the end of his career.
Well, he's sure done a lot of losing already in his career.
I should say he's at the end of his prime, or wherever it is that you would find Jimmy Butler's prime. And so whatever a guy is learning, they say it all the time after games, will learn from this, but not a regular season loss when you've been in the league 10 years.
I mean, I guess you can learn from a personal point of view how to handle losses better.
But what I would say to you about Tua, Stugatz, you tell me which one. If you're of the belief that failure is the thing that teaches, okay? Right. If you're of the belief that Tua in that spot had to fail and feel the suffering of failure, I ask you this. Which hurts more in terms of the suffering of failure? Losing the game? Or your coach benching you in the third quarter and saying, I'm going back to the other guy. You're not ready yet for this situation. Because both of those are learning situations. You guys are saying only one of them is.
Here, Dan, how much losing has Tua done? Like, he's led a pretty charmed life.
How much benching has Tua done?
He probably hasn't done a lot of it. Jalen Hurts did. He was benched for Tua. Yeah. So, I mean, how much?
He might have gotten benched in that SEC title game, and he sustained an injury there, and then Hurts actually led them back, and it was sort of like, a reverse story for him. But he was ineffective in that game, but not a lot of adversity for the player.
I mean, he was 3-0 as a starter. He lost this past game, lost to the Broncos. I'm not certain how many games he lost in Alabama. It couldn't be more than maybe 2 or 3.
Tua.
You have to experience some losses. I mean, you do, and have to be the reason your team loses. It's
okay.
Wait a minute.
Okay, you're saying that, but why don't you have to experience some benchings and national shames instead of just the loss? It could have been either way. Tua was terrible in this game, and they lost, or Tua was terrible in this game, and he was benched.
Because I'd rather him go through the on-field experience of not being able to pull that out or pulling it out rather than being benched. For me, that's what I would prefer.
Yeah, I think Stugatz is correct, and Tua has a ton on his shoulders as a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Now, here's what else he has on his shoulders, courtesy of his head coach. He's carrying around with him now the idea that, wow, if I throw a first quarter interception, if I've only produced 10 points at halftime, I'm on thin ice here. I'm on thin ice, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a motivator. Maybe it isn't, but I agree with Stu Gatz. Let Tua win or lose this game on his own, because if he wins it on his own, that's a growth that really, really helps him. And if he loses it on his own, that's an experience that's inevitable. I mean, it's going to happen, and it should have happened then. Look, if Fitzpatrick throws that touchdown pass instead of a pick and they go into overtime, perhaps, it worked out, but it doesn't make it the right decision just because it worked. I don't think so.
Well, but it doesn't make it the wrong decision just because it didn't work, or Stu Gatz is able to say it didn't work.
I mean, for the now, right, that's the tricky part in all of this. It's really, it's fascinating. There's the now that Brian Flores is playing for, and there's the future. And
that's
the
job, Stu Gatz. Like, that, you've entrusted that to that man. Like, that is, right. That is, you have given him the most precious gift, the young hope of a quarterback. This can be your job for the next 10 years, sir.
Right.
Here is the front end of the decision-making you have to make in terms of raising the baby when you're still in the embryonic fluid stage of things.
But, Dan, I want to see
Fitzpatrick's just a midwife, man. He's just here to help you birth the baby.
I understand that, but I'd like to see if Tua is the type of quarterback who can play his B game for most of the game and then in the final 10 minutes give you his A-plus
game. Okay, but you saw it for three quarters, only his shit game.
Yeah, but I've also seen other quarterbacks do that, and then the fourth quarter they turn it on and they pull the game out.
I got to tell you guys that the part I'm more concerned about, even though the results have been good, and the results have been good not really because of him. In one game, the results were good because of him. Tua was able to do the things late in the drive. The thing that's more concerning to me is not but three bad quarters at Denver when your offensive line is porous. The thing that's concerning to me is that because of the weapons they have on this team, he has been in all of the games an intermediate thrower.
Yes.
An accurate intermediate thrower, and I don't like the Dolphins playing in a phone booth, even though they can be efficient. It requires less of a margin for error for him than you'd like, because you have to have the threat of the ball down the field, and they don't have that right now.
I think Greg and Stu Gatz both agree that they want to see if Tua's this transcendent talent, that no matter what, no matter how bad the team is around him with Marino, no matter how bad the running game is, no matter how bad the defense is, as long as I have that guy with the ball in his hands, I've got a shot.
Doesn't quite feel like that.
Is he Russell Wilson? Is he Patrick Mahomes? Is he Aaron Rodgers? Well, no. But I would caution you, there's nothing wrong with being like a Jimmy Garoppolo or an Alex Smith that's had a career for a long time, or a Derek Carr, which now it seems we're ready to make an evaluation on him. You got rid of one of these guys already in Ryan Tannehill, and he made it to an AFC Championship game. You can win with a Tua if you have a team that can score in all three phases, like you have one right now. So trust the coach, because he's a huge part of being a successful franchise.
Mike, here's the problem. Part of the reason, according to Adam Schefter, that they wanted to start Tua now is because they have the Texans pick. So are you going to settle for Jimmy Garoppolo if potentially Aaron Rodgers is sitting there in the draft? I don't know, because he's potentially sitting right there in the draft. But in the form of Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence.
They can make that evaluation without that fourth quarter in Denver. That's an evaluation that they're making every day in practice. They don't need one quarter in Denver to determine that.
Or the fact that they made the decision is part of their evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Look, the Dolphins weren't supposed to be contending for the playoffs this season. They're a year ahead of what the pace was expected to be. There's a lot wrong with this team. The offensive line isn't very good. They don't really have a running back. It's a running back by committee. Ahmed is okay. Miles Gaskin was okay. But these aren't premier running backs. They're missing their top deep threat right now Williams.
Greg,
there's a lot of missing pieces.
They're going to get him so much help if they believe he is the answer. They're going to get him so much help in this draft, like in terms of needing skill guys who are game breakers. God almighty, when's the last time the Dolphins had one of those? Like,
I mean, they have Parker, but it's not enough.
No, but he'll give you – I'm talking about a guy that you look up and he's giving you another 70-yard touchdown like Julio Jones. I'm talking about not a second tier of number one receiver. Devontae Parker is a good guy who will get you some numbers in fantasy, who will get you some yards in fantasy. But there aren't a whole lot of 60-yard one-play drives on this team's resume.
Everybody wants that, and there's like three of them.
But you get him high in the draft.
Well, not exactly. I mean, Mahomes was like, what, number 15? Like, quarterbacks went ahead of Mahomes. Russell Wilson was a third-round draft pick, I believe. Like, Aaron Rodgers slid all the way to the end of the first round. There are three of them on the planet. And you can do plenty of winning with someone that's, like, tier two.
I'm talking about the wide receivers that you saw on the field. Oh, yeah. Even in that, in merely that Minnesota game, where you're watching both sides, Dallas and Minnesota, and you're like, whoa, this is some real athleticism they have at the skill positions that the Dolphins, they just don't have that. Their number two receiver isn't any kind of special, and their number one receiver is the bottom half of number ones in the league.
I want to make an old-timey reference here that applies to the Dolphins of today. I remember talking to Mark Clayton once and asking him, how does it feel to have a future Hall of Famer like Dan Marino throwing to you? And he looked at me and said, how does he feel having Mark Clayton and Mark Duper to throw to? And the Dolphins just haven't had that for 40 years. And if they can get one of those elite, deep threat, 10 touchdown catch a year guys, all of a sudden Tua Tagovailoa blossoms and looks like a different quarterback.
What he's saying is so true. I
agree.
I am marveling, okay, at what it is that a position player of that sort, of that caliber, can do as a fountain of youth for Ben Roethlisberger. Okay? Like, mm-hmm. They keep finding receivers there, and now they've got one who's just a touchdown maker. He comes out of nowhere,
He's not.
Did you guys not think I knew his name there?
I'm pretty certain.
No,
you
they're
did
just
not.
Being good yeah. teammates.
Yeah, we good don't teammates.
Have to,
that's all.
We
yeah.
don't have to say
yeah.
it.
So it's you 10 touchdowns it, no. in 10 games. Not a whole lot of wide receivers have done that. They've had so many wide receivers that are good, and now look at the difference between the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger. He was a turnover machine, Stugatz. Like,
yes.
And he's not. He still turns it over more than you'd like, but he's also old.
If through this draft or through free agency somehow Devontae Parker can become your second best wide receiver, then you're on to something.
Yeah, and opposite end of the coin, you have a situation with Deshaun Watson, who's just like, if he's not tier one, he's right there,
he's
nipping
so
at
good,
the heels.
So
and
good.
You see what's happened to him with zero talent around him. So you need to build a complete team. It doesn't seem as though they have a transcendent talent, but the jury can still be out on that. Philly fans would have argued that Carson Wentz was a transcendent talent. Ravens fans would have argued that the MVP Lamar Jackson would have been one of those tier one guys for the rest of his career. Now we have questions. You need to build a complete team. You need to have a coach that you have faith in. This is the first time. And while it wasn't 7-0, his defense put him in a tremendous situation. He's been put in great situations to start every game. They're building something nice here. Tripping up on the road at Denver, I don't think it's anything to freak out about.
Greg, as someone who's covered the Dolphins for a long time, as someone who has seen all sorts of grades of number one receivers, and as a fantasy nerd, what do you do with your evaluation of Devontae Parker? Is it fair to say that he is a number one receiver, but he is bottom half of the number one receivers in the league? That he is not one of these guys. And I don't think there's anybody I've ever been more wrong on, Stugatz, than Davante Adams. Like, in not thinking that Davante Adams was a number one receiver. Like, I don't believe that I've ever been as wrong about anything. That goes up there with my 0-16 Lions are going to make the playoffs position.
He'd be great anyway.
Mike was able to hide in the shadows of that. Of that
so
belief.
Bad. People forget how bad he was to start his career. But yeah, I'll take that L. He's been good.
But you've been hiding in the shadows. I'm
well,
the
you
one
think
who
he's
needs
bad.
Take,
much like what happened with the Marlins and Billy Stokoe.
You were an instigator. You made it worse. Yeah. Yes, you fired me up and got me extra wrong on that.
But you were so right the first season and a half of his career.
But where do you put him, Greg? Like, where does Devontae Parker go in terms of legitimate number ones?
Man, he's had a weird career because normally elite wide receivers are elite as rookies, or at least by their second year. Devontae Parker, after 3 or 4 years, looked like a draft bust, picked 14th overall, and then he blossomed quickly. I think right now, Stugatz said it, if he's your number two receiver, you have a good wide receiver room. If he's your number one, there's room for improvement, or you better have a 1B that's almost as good as him. No, I don't think he's an elite receiver. I think he's in fantasy parlance, I think he's a WR2. If he's your best receiver, you don't have as good a receiver as a dozen other teams.
Mike, is the wide receiver we're talking about, does he exist in this NFL draft? Is it Jalen Waddle?
Who's the Waddle got hurt. Chase, I think, from LSU. It's hard. This season's really difficult to make an evaluation on players because few games. Chase over at LSU's had certain issues that have made sure that he hasn't really gotten on the field with any sort of consistency out there. Maybe they exist, but you can't say with certainty because you're not watching these games.
Sugats, this is going to be very exciting to you. Just like the other day, for reasons I don't remember, we did tiers of teams in the AFC. I don't know whether we forgot the Colts or not, but they are now in the second tier as well. I think we forgot the Colts last time we talked about it. I'm not totally sure. But
tier two, huh?
Much like tier two talk, are you guys ready for number one receiver? Would you rather have Devontae Parker or X? Are you ready to do this?
Been waiting for it my entire life. All right,
Devontae Parker or Stephon Diggs? Who would you rather have? That's not a question, correct?
Diggs. No, not a question.
Diggs.
At all. Diggs is arguably the best route runner in the NFL.
Okay, but is Devontae Parker the second best number one receiver in the division? Because New England, you wouldn't take Edelman at this point, right?
And then just bypass the entire Jet organization.
All right, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Claypool, you would take him first, yes?
Yeah.
They might have two guys.
They've got three guys, Pittsburgh.
I would take Devontae Parker over Juju Smith-Schuster.
So would I.
They've got three guys, you guys are saying, that you'd rather
have? I would obviously take Deontay Johnson over Juju Smith-Schuster.
He's very good.
Cleveland, Johnson. Odell Beckham. Can we assume health there? Can we assume you'd rather have Odell Beckham than Devontae Parker?
You can make an argument that Jarvis Landry has always been the number one there.
Baltimore's hurting, right? Baltimore is
I would still take Hollywood Brown. People are like, well, Hollywood Brown just isn't the same player. I'm like, wait, he's in year two. Wait, he's not the same, but Lamar Jackson is.
Over Devonta?
Yeah, he's got that all-world track speed.
Devontae has been
most
better.
People would take Devontae right
whatever.
Now.
Whatever, we're going to keep doing this. Bengals, are we still doing A.J. Green there?
T. Higgins.
Boyd, too.
Yeah, I would probably take Devontae over them, but it's a lot closer than it would seem.
Colts, it's not even T.Y. Is it T.Y. Hilton?
No, Pittman. Pittman's a future there. Yeah. If I had the opportunity to grab Pittman or Devontae Parker right now for the future, I'd probably grab Pittman.
Titans, A.J. Brown, is who you'd be going there?
Inconsistent.
That's a Devontae. Decent comparison, actually. Yeah. I feel like they're like the same, those two.
Tony, you were shaking your head vigorously no there.
No. I was saying, yes, I'd take A.J. Brown light years over Devontae Parker, and I don't think Chris knows that he is not the same as Devontae Parker. Like, A.J. Brown is built different.
Yeah.
Physically built different, right? Is that what you're talking about? Or are you doing the more abstract, he's
both,
built different?
Dan, both.
Like, both. Okay, very good. So Houston and Jacksonville doesn't have anyone that you would take over Devontae Parker, correct?
Will Fuller?
Not Will Fuller. DJ Chark? No, probably no.
Oh, audience, I'm so sorry we're doing this because we're only at the Chiefs. But the Chiefs, you got one guy you take, right? I mean, we're not making Kelsey a wide receiver. You take Hill over Devontae Parker, obviously.
Yes.
Las Vegas, you're not going to do Waller, even though they use some of these guys in terms of production, the way wide receivers.
Take Ruggs. I'll take Ruggs over Parker.
Ruggs is... You take Ruggs. I mean, Ruggs.
Ruggs is a rookie. He's shown more in his rookie season than Devontae certainly did in his.
In that offensive game, did he do anything last on Monday?
Ruggs has done enough for me to say. I'll take his future.
But so is Devontae Parker. Anyway, Denver. Anything?
I would take Judy and
Judy's
Patrick.
Good, yeah.
Tim Patrick's, he's not a sexy name because it's so generic, but he's probably better than Devontae
Parker. Do the Chargers have two guys you have ahead of Devontae Parker?
Yes.
I don't want Mike Williams over Devontae Parker.
I mean, he's the number two. They're featuring.
I want you
Keenan
drafting
Allen.
In front of me.
Like, you got to imagine, Mike Williams is in the position of what is in the position Devontae Parker would be in if Keenan Allen was on this team.
Right.
I love this game. It's probably shit to listen to though.
Yeah, but Justin Herbert does that. He'll take Mike Williams, who was okay, and make him very, very good. That's what you want to see Tua do.
I've got the whole other conference in front of me.
Let's do it, please.
Shugats wants to do it. No,
this is a local hour.
No,
come on.
Mike, I think that you're right. I think that we should. Okay, coming up next on Big Suey, we will give you the NFC number ones. We do it next.
Hold on now. now I gotta look up Ruggs. I'm not, you know,
Ruggs. I think on Sunday night, Ruggs had one end around for 4 yards.
We quickly swept that under the rug. You know,
you
what
guys,
I'm saying?
I said, what did he do in the last game? And you guys, he's hit or miss. And I'm like, one catch for 5 yards.
That was the hit.
In space
miss.
Age,
big miss.
Let me check out his game logs. Ruggs.
The question is, does he have more yards in the one Kansas City game that he caught a 72-yard touchdown pass than he does the entire season other than that game?
He has 14 catches this year. I mean, Ruggs. He averages 18 yards every time he catches the ball, but he has 14.
I hope we're leaving all of that in. Stugott's marveling at the fact that we just skipped merrily over Ruggs and we took Ruggs instead of Devontae Parker, even though Ruggs has 14 catches and you're remembering the one of them against Kansas City.
Well, then are we taking Aguilar over him?
Oh, my God. No.
What I'm remembering is the 3 catches, 118 yards, and 59 yards.
Hold on.
Catch.
We got to talk about Aguilar because I believe Aguilar is somebody who in Philadelphia was exactly shackled the way Devontae Parker is here by all of the offensive awfulness. And you have seen in Las Vegas that he looks like a different receiver in terms of a threat. Philadelphia fans make fun of that dude for dropping the ball. But Aguilar this season has been a legitimate number one. Like, that's not – that we're not making that up. He has looked like a number one more than Devontae Parker has looked like a number one.
Devontae Parker had a ton of injuries, so it's hard to compare his rookie season to the likes of Henry Ruggs. But Devontae Parker had 26 catches his rookie season and only came on late. He put up 3 good games to close the season, which can happen for rookie wide receivers. And he ended the season with a 100-yard game, the first of his career.
Greg, how do you feel about all of this? Because I really don't actually want to go through the NFC, but I do believe that there are a lot of teams that don't have a legitimate number one, and they're all the bad teams. All of the bad teams don't have a legitimate number one receiver. So I don't think I want to do this, but Stugatz wants to do it. Mike seems to want to do it.
Get to Kenny Galladay. I dare you.
Can I get a vote here from Billy and from Tony and from Chris on whether or not you guys want to keep doing number one receivers, NFC East, North, South, and West.
I would do it.
Wow, all thumbs up from all of you.
We owe it to the audience, Dan.
Right.
And then I think we should do Tua comparing all the quarterbacks in the league.
Ooh, say that for Big Suey.
Am I reading this
right? This is Big Suey, isn't it?
No, I haven't stopped rolling. This is still the local hour.
Oh, really?
I can't keep it all in and go to Big Suey. I'm just one man.
What are you guys doing with Aguilar? Whatever his name is, Aguilar.
You have had trouble trying to pronounce.
Nelson.
Why did you? Explain. Hold on a second. Hold on. Mike, let's start Big
Suey. Aguilar.
Let's start Big Suey.
Aguilar.
The number of times Stugatz has gotten this name wrong at the end of this segment.
It's a tough one. He doesn't deserve for me to know his name. He's not a number one wide receiver. He has 24 catches.
There it is, the pivot, the kitty litter pivot, the dog that goes.
One.
You've seen that dog when it shits that it starts with its back legs kicking up grass. Here we go. He can't pronounce Aguilar.
Oh, Nelly.
So this is where we're going to pick up the show, talking about Stugatz mispronunciations and Big Suey next.